If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
There are things in the corners of this world that'll drive you insane.
You're going to tell me what this is all about?
Trust me, you've never seen anything like this.
You're in for it now.
I love him. Why?
We belong dead.
Who are you? I didn't put you there.
What do we do now?
We run.
You're not going to get very far in your condition.
Good luck.
All right, good Sunday morning to you. It's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. So Creepshow, Shudder's new anthology series based on the 1982 horror comedy classic, is still the most fun you'll ever have being scared. A comic book comes to life in a series of 12 vignettes over 6 episodes, exploring terrors from murder to the supernatural and unexplainable. Haunted dollhouses, werewolves, murderous goblins, villainous trick-or-treaters, the dead, and medical marvels are just a few of the things to watch out for in this new series. Now, David Arquette will star in an episode called Times is Tough and Muskie Holler, based on a short story. And to talk about it all is David Arquette. Dave, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
I am good. You are no stranger to the horror genre. I have to imagine this reboot was very appealing to you.
It was. I love horror, and being in the Scream franchise was one of the highlights of my career. But I fell in love with Creepshow, the film, as a kid. And this series stays true to it. It's two really exciting horror shorts within one episode. There's always a twist at the end, and there's humor throughout. So it's a lot of fun.
The original Creepshow, let's talk about that a little bit. It was directed by George A. Romero and written by Stephen King. I mean, when you think about those two guys pairing up together, you just can't get better than that.
Oh, I love when great artists sort of pair up and bring their talents together. In this, we have the executive producer, Greg Nicotero, who did The Walking Dead. And he's special effects guru, so he loves horror, he loves scaring people, he loves doing these practical effects, which you don't get much of nowadays. It's a lot of CGI, so
yeah,
it's fun to see it sort of, you know, real life kind of crazy puppets sometimes.
That's true. I'm a little bit older than you. I think I remember seeing Creepshow at the drive-in in high school.
I love drive-in.
Yeah, right? Same here. I know. It is a little bit of a lost art here in Chicago. We really only have one left, and it's jam-packed. And during the Halloween season, they always show some classic old horror movies mixed with some new ones. It is an interesting way to watch a movie that I think a lot of people have never experienced.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's a whole different thing, and I love it. Yeah, I love all the old sort of cinematic elements. I love going into a dark room with a bunch of strangers and watching a film.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit, without giving much away, though, but tell us a little bit about this episode.
So, yeah, Times Are Tough in Muskie Holler. It's about a town that sort of gets drunk with power and locks up the people in the town and, like, kills off the sheriff and the previous mayor, and a bad mayor takes over, and then the town turns back on them. So you pick it up there where all the people who have done this town bad are being locked up, and they're going to pay the price.
That's awesome. Perfect time of year for a story like that. I love it. You must have some horror favorites, some must-watches during the Halloween season. Like, yeah, kids, we're going to sit down, and these are the movies we're going to see.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Shining, and all those classics are great. But there's some really great new ones. I mean, Get Out was incredible, and Hereditary was great. High Tension is a foreign film that was really incredible. So I love horror movies.
What about the black and white, some of the classic Universals and so forth? Are those still pretty appealing to you?
Oh, yeah. Frankenstein's like one of my favorites forever. And the Bela Lugosi is Dracula. I mean, I love those. I watch with my son. He's only five, so
yeah.
You have to be a little careful. But I'll like watch Godzilla with him, which isn't too scary, but he still enjoys it.
What about
old ones?
Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein is such a nice pairing of Lon Chaney and Bela Lugosi, which only everyone thinks he played Dracula for 30 years. He played him twice.
Yeah.
Right? In film.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that was great. And Ed Wood's a real fun movie to watch.
It is.
My sister's in that, Patricia.
Yeah, it's a good. Oh, that's right. The Scream franchise that you were talking about, of course, was as big as Halloween and Friday the 13th for like a new generation. I mean, it was just written in a way that was appealing to just a whole new crowd.
Yeah, it was one of the first films to sort of take in this meta approach to filmmaking where, you know, the audience is getting smart. You can watch DVD extras and see behind the scenes. People are starting to know shots and all this sort of things that go into making a film. So to play with some of that, to play with the history of horror films and with Jamie Kennedy's character in that and just sort of having fun with it. And that's really what Wes Craven was such a genius about. He was just amazing. The director, but also he was a professor and a bird watcher. He just loved entertaining people and scaring them, really.
There were four movies. Like after the success of the first one, were you hesitant about doing a second or a third or a fourth? Because each one was as good as the next.
My favorite, honestly, I met my ex-wife on that. So it's right. Not often that you make that kind of connection. And then we ended up having a baby together, and then we were really upset with each other in Scream 2 and Scream 3. We got married, and Scream 4, we got a divorce. So it was like a very history of my life.
It really was.
Those films.
It really was,
but,
yeah.
I did enjoy them, and they all have a different tone, and I like that as well.
Would you like to see a Scream 5?
I would love to. I love playing the character of Dewey. But it would be really sad without having Wes on the set. But to continue his legacy would be really, really good. And I think good for horror fans. And, you know, that's the great thing about film in general. It just lives on. So anything you can do to keep him in our thoughts and continuing sort of something he started, I think that's always a good thing.
You got to know the late Wes Craven, you know, and other films, The Hills Have Eyes, Nightmare on Elm Street, Swamp Thing, of course, way before Scream. What was the experience like working with one of the greats in that genre?
He was just such a honorable guy, a really down-to-earth guy. He gave me a lot of advice as a director, but also as a father figure. He helped me a lot, sort of. On Scream 2, my mother was dying, so he really helped me through that and was really supportive. Just a wonderful person. I had the opportunity a few times to watch him watch the audience while they saw his film.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
He got such a kick out of like seeing the audience jump, and he would just giggle. It was really wonderful. He had a great sense of humor. He was just a really world-class person.
Did that relationship you had with him motivate you to produce the horror film The Tripper? That must have provided you with your master's in filmmaking, right?
It did. He really told me, like, watch Suspirio and all these, like, avant-garde kind of off-track horror films. He gave me advice on how to scare an audience and how to set up shots and... And yeah, he was really instrumental in doing that and you know, had some great notes on it through the process.
You know, that's a nice peek into this whole thing because I don't think the average Joe would realize that a filmmaker would sit and watch an audience reaction to his own film just to see how he did and maybe what he would want to do differently next time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually at a test screening, so the audience gave notes right after, so... He took those all into consideration. He was always really excited about entertaining the audience. He was a lover of music, too. He did a beautiful film with Meryl Streep. I forgot the name of it at the moment, but it was really great.
Very cool. Speaking of filmmaking, I know how much you are part of the wrestling world. You just finished a wrestling documentary?
Yeah, I spent the last year and a half wrestling through the independent circuit throughout the country. And it was really exciting. I learned how to wrestle. I trained with some wonderful trainers like Peter Avalon, who's also an amazing wrestler at AEW. And I got to wrestle Jungle Boy, who's also a wrestler at AEW. But it really is about my love for wrestling, why fans got so mad at me when I won the championship in 2000.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
And
I know.
Sort of clearing my name and respecting wrestling. It's a love letter to wrestling and why I love it.
So the documentary itself, I mean, are you really looking at the history of all this? Because you think about the genre, how popular it is today. It was just as popular on television in the dawn of television, the late 1940s, 50s, 60s. Wrestling was as big as baseball and football, you know, watching. I mean, people would go to the corner bar, they'd stand outside a corner store, and they would watch it, you know, if they didn't have a TV themselves. I mean, it was big.
Yeah, WWE's on Fox on Friday nights. It's like a huge thing for them to be on network television for the first time. And it's really a golden age of wrestling. So I love it. I love all the sort of different leagues. NWA is a really old league that Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana just resurrected and bringing it back to its old glory. So it's great to see all these incredible wrestlers have a place where they could show their talent.
What got you into all that?
I loved it as a kid. I saw Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan fight at a local show in Los Angeles, and I touched Andre's back, and forever I was just kind of like a fan of it. I loved the Junkyard Dog and Jimmy Superfly Snuka and that whole old sort of time, and Macho Man Randy Savage. And I was in love with Miss Elizabeth. That's really what
that's what it was. A woman. A woman got you into wrestling. I love that. I love that.
Oh, that they always do. That's at the root of it all.
That's great. I know you've got a lot of eclectic interests, and I had read this long time ago. You know, we're of course based here in Chicago. We're WGN. You have a really unique interest in Larry Harmon's Bozo the Clown. Don't you?
Oh, yeah. I love it. Like, it goes back to like one of the earliest things I fell in love with. I lived in Chicago from like 2 to 5. And I was just, I'd watch Bozo every morning. And I don't know, there's something about somebody who's just super positive and fun. And these kids won these prizes. And I just, then I went to the circus, the Ringling Brothers. All the clowns in real life, they were just my favorite. Some people get scared by clowns, but I just love them, and I love Bozo.
Well, you know, it's funny too, because when you watch any of the, you know, there's a special that airs every holiday. There's not a lot of, you know, Bob Bell was the Bozo, and of course,
yes,
you know, there was tens of thousands of episodes that he starred in, and I'm actually the chair of the Broadcast Museum here in Chicago. We might have 8 or 10 episodes of him. That's it. That actually exist. But he didn't just talk to the kids. He talked to the adults. Like, when you watch it now, you realize all the double entendres that he was integrating into the skits, because they were all, you know, they were all improvised for the most part.
Absolutely. He was a genius. He really captured the spirit of Bozo. And I, before Larry Harmon died, I helped him get connected with a writer, Neil Strauss, who connected him with the writer that ended up writing his autobiography with him.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah. I like, you know, it's one brand though that needs to be to be brought back in some way. Like, it's just kind of, it's a little quiet. There's some products out there and so forth, but you know, whether you turn it into an animation a program on one of the younger kids networks or something. Like, I think that that brand still has life, don't you?
Absolutely. I've been trying to work on that for a long time.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, before I let you go, I need to ask you about this. My son is going to school in Chicago at the School of the Art Institute. He reveres Bob Ross's work. And you are a certified Bob Ross instructor, and you do a lot of it for charity. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, I tend to focus on things now, like, you know, I'm approaching 50, so I'm starting to like focus my energy on things that I truly love, like wrestling, painting, bozo, clowns. So
yeah, right. A lot of eclectic stuff. That's cool.
All the stuff that I loved as a kid. So I always loved Bob Ross, and I went to New Smyrna Beach, Florida, and took a 3-week course and learned how to be a certified Bob Ross instructor.
Wow.
So now I just use it as things that people can bid on in charities, and then I get to meet amazing people, and they get to learn how to paint a Bob Ross style wet on wet technique painting.
Yeah. What was it that Bob Ross that appealed to you and got you into it?
He's just such a lot like Wes Cruz. Strangely enough, he had this soft spoken nature to him. Even though people don't know this, he was a Marine drill instructor.
Wow.
Drill sergeant. So just to think of Bob Ross screaming at you, it was pretty funny. But he got sick of screaming at people. He fell in love with painting. He went up to Alaska and got inspired by the landscapes up there and developed this technique that anyone can learn, and you can paint a painting in like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, really, he's been brought to the forefront the last couple of years. Like, as soon as my son sees anything Bob Ross, even down to socks, he's got to have them, right?
Yeah, it's great. He's on Netflix now, so you can just put it on. It's one of the greatest things to, like, fall asleep to because it's so peaceful. But if you watch him, he's just such a master. He's done hundreds of thousands of paintings, so his technique is really flawless. And his whole sort of love and drive was to just get people painting. And that's really what I do it for, too. Like, more people can find a creative outlet, a sort of better chance they have at dealing with stress or depression and things like that. It can really get you out of some of the darker moments of life.
So you do use that for peace and just for some relaxation.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah.
Any kind of creative outlet, any kind of physical activity, stuff like that really helps if you deal with depression like I do.
I got to imagine, too, that you bring, right, so you bring that to other people. So what you've learned from doing that to help yourself, it's got to feel good to teach it to others, to give them that same sense of peace in dealing with those emotions.
Yeah, and when people see, like they painted this, like, they can't believe it, and, you know, if they're happy with it, it's exciting to see somebody proud of what they've created, and that's part of this whole thing.
Very cool. Well, you can catch the new Creepshow on Shudder. It's a premium streaming service brought to you by AMC Networks. And for more, you can visit Shudder.com. David's got the new wrestling documentary coming out. Look out for that as well. And always a great pleasure to talk to you, Dave, and I appreciate you joining us.
Great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. All right. Top stories are next on 720 WGN.